Welcome to the TEFL Training Institute podcast, the bite-sized TEFL podcast for teachers, trainers, and managers.
Hi, everyone.
Hello, everyone.
I guess whoever you are, wherever you teach, whatever you're doing, you probably use a course book to teach. And this week, we have probably the world's greatest expert, I would say, on course books. And that's Professor Brian Thompson from the University of Anaheim.
Brian contributed to course books, which has been used in so many countries like China, Ethiopia, Bulgaria, Japan, Malaysia, Morocco, Turkey, Namibia, Singapore, Nigeria, and Zambia.
And Brian, during our conversation, told us about some of those course books. Anyway, so we spoke to Brian about three main areas related to teachers adapting course books. So the first one we had was sort of general strategies for adapting course books. And then?
And how to ask questions that help engage students.
And finally, activities that teachers can use to make the best use of text. Hi, Brian. I remember reading an article you wrote about years ago when you were first teaching, getting students to... You were so frustrated with your course book, you got the students to all stand up at the windows with their course books and on the count of three, all throw them out the window. So that's obviously a pretty extreme way for teachers to use a course book. What, say, less extreme ways are there for teachers to adapt the materials in their course books?
Well, there are two simple, less radical things you can do. One of them is to flip the activities. So instead of starting with activity twos, start with activity 10. So go first of all to the more personal response activities. Don't start by focusing on the language because you'll end up focusing the entire lesson on the language. So that's very easy to do. I've done that with teachers on teacher training courses. And the other very simple thing is open up closed questions. If, for example, there's a little text and it said, Bernard drove to work in Indonesia every morning. The question in the textbook was, who drove to work every morning? Typical closed surface question, answer, Bernard drove to work every morning. And that's very easy to open up. So first of all, instead of repeating the word drive, who went by car every day? So they have to understand it. And then you add why. And then you add, do you think this is a good idea? You're still doing what is in the course book, but you're also opening it up. And that's very easy, very quick and easy to do. And the other thing, which is, well, it's not that demanding, but it's a bit more demanding until you get used to it, is to make the activities more creative. And I did this on a course in Colombia where after one workshop, I got the trainees to adapt the unit from the course book before the workshop. And we looked at what they'd done. And they had deleted some things, they'd added things. But in most cases, it was still closed and it wasn't requiring any cognitive effort from the learner. There was no challenge. I did one workshop with them and then they adapted another course book unit and suddenly they'd become creative. It's what I call they were setting an achievable challenge to the students and that is creating cognitive engagement.
Can you give us an example of how teachers can create that sort of deep processing that really leads to language acquisition so that involves not just affective engagement but also cognitive engagement?
I'll give you an example from a course book was written by two of my ex-students, actually, which is a medical course book for doctors and nurses training to work in the UK from overseas. It's a very good course book, but they were constrained by the publishers. So they've got a potentially engaging text written by a doctor about doctor-patient relationships. It's written in a lot of medical terms. I found it difficult to follow at times. It has the potential for affective and cognitive engagement, but afterwards they then answer fairly standard conventional questions. In the text, the doctor talks about research, which indicates that male doctors typically wait 47 seconds before interrupting the patient. And female doctors typically, I think, 2 or 3 minutes. And he realized this is not long enough because the patient won't reveal what's wrong with them because they spend the opening time, they're nervous and uncomfortable. So he did an experiment The next patient, who was an old lady, he just let her talk and talk. And the nurse came in and indicated to her watch, people are waiting, come on, hurry up. And he carried on. And she talked for 22 minutes. She talked about how she doesn't like coming to the doctor. She talked about the weather. She talked about a sister. But the word cough kept reoccurring. And what finally emerged was from this 22 minutes, he suspected she had a lung problem. And he sent her to a specialist who confirmed that she had lung cancer. And he sent her back to get antibiotics from the doctor. And he says to her, hey, I'm really sorry. This has been a terrible day for you. And she says to him, oh, don't worry. I've had a good life. I just want you to know this is the best doctor visit I've ever had. You're the only doctor who ever listened to me. So it's got this very moving, if you focus on that. So what we did with it, because there's a lot of technical terms all the way through, which takes out a lot of the affective engagement. So I started, instead of giving them the text to read, I summarized it and I focused on the affective elements, the relationship with the old lady and how she revealed that she had cancer and how she was so appreciative of him listening. And people were actually in tears. And then I said that they had to read it. And as they read it, they had to think of a solution to the problem. How can you make sure that the patient has sufficient time to reveal what is wrong with them whilst not creating a huge backlog of patients in the waiting room? Very demanding task. And they had to do that as they read it, then get in groups and discuss their ideas, and then write a letter to the hospital authority suggesting a new approach. So the affective engagement was the story of the old lady, which is very moving. And the cognitive engagement was the achievable challenge of solving the problem. Now, neither of those were highlighted in the original. The original focused on language. It's an example of what teachers can do with the material. And in fact, we started off with a readiness activity in which in threes, one was a doctor, one was a patient, and one was an observer. And the doctor and patient had to just have a doctor-patient conversation. And the observer timed how long it was before the doctor interrupted. The doctor and patient didn't know this. They didn't know what the observer was doing. We used the textbook material, but added these creative elements.
One of the problems I often find with writing materials is for lower level students and linguistically simple texts, how can you ask students questions that are effectively engaging and involve like higher level thinking skills, okay, but still using simple enough language that the students are able to understand?
I'll give you a classic example of that as well. I was teaching in a university in Oman. I was teaching first year undergrads, so they're 18, 19 years old, some low level, some quite high level. And I used a children's story. It's called Not Now, Bernard. And it's written for sort of 6 or 7 year olds. It's about a kid who comes home from school and says to his mother, hello, mother. And she says, not now, Bernard. And then, hello, Dad, not now, Bernard. And they're both busy and they both ignore him. And he's trying to tell them there's a monster in the garden, but they don't listen. Yeah, there's a monster in the garden, not now, Bernard. And he goes in the garden and he says, hello, monster. And the monster eats him. And the monster comes in the house and bites Bernard's father. And he says, not now, Bernard. And he pesters the mother, not now, Bernard. And she tells him his dinner's ready, so he sits down and eats the dinner, and he watches TV, he sees the monster, and he breaks one of the kid's toys, and he gets sent to bed with his milk and as a punishment. And the monster goes upstairs, but he keeps shouting, but I'm a monster! And the mother says, not now, Bernard. So it's a very silly but quite amusing story, which either I act it out as the teacher and I get them to visualize it, or I get them to act it out as I tell the story. But then the first question is, who do you think was responsible for Bernard's death? So silly children's story with a very serious question. So it's linguistically simple text, but a cognitively complex question. what happened in Oman was quite remarkable. The classroom, you've got male on one side and female on the other, and they don't normally interact. And when I said who was responsible for Bernard's death, one of the guys immediately said, well, obviously the mother. And I said, why? And he said, well, the mother's responsible for the child. But a brave young female spoke for the first time ever and said, no, it's the father. What? The mother was busy making the dinner. The father should have looked after it. And they had this wonderful argument. And to me, there are two things you're trying to do in the classroom. One is get students to laugh, and the other is to get them to argue. Because if they argue, they need to use language. If they agree, they don't. And there was a wonderful argument went on across the classroom. And then somebody said, it's the teacher's fault. What? And then they had an argument about this. It's society's fault. And that one simple question provoked a 30-minute argument across the classroom, whereas the normal course book would never do that because it's just asking 10 closed questions.
It's quite interesting that you mentioned getting students to argue with each other, but yeah. Usually in the classroom when teachers try and, you know, I think they see their role to stop students from arguing, not get them to disagree with each other. So can you, you know, tell us a bit more about how you use a text to get the students to disagree with each other and argue with each other so that can motivate them to talk about what they've just read?
It's got to be an open-ended text, and poetry is very good for this because poetry, there's no one interpretation. So it's got to be something where different people will see it differently. A text where somebody will really like one of the characters and somebody will hate them. There's this text I use about an old woman who is very selfish. She says, I want to live with love, but not to love. I want my shoes taken off my feet. She's saying, I'm old now. I want things done for me. The first question I ask after that is, do you like the old woman? Very simple question. Why? And some of them can't stand her because she's so selfish. And some sympathize and say, well, she spent her life giving to other people. It's time she got something back. Again, that's a linguistically simple text with a cognitively complex problem behind it.
So, Brian, you mentioned a few times this idea of getting students to visualize and experience a text. And I've heard you write before about this idea of getting the lesson to start in the students' minds instead of getting it to start on a bit of paper. What's your view on using reading books that have got a lot of illustrations? Like, are there any issues there with sort of circumventing students' imaginations?
It stops them from visualizing. It seems like a very appealing thing to do because it's engaging, but it does, particularly in a foreign language, prevent visualization. So what I would do is, like this Not Now Bernard poem is illustrated in the book, I don't show them the illustrations. I get them to create their own in their mind. And then afterwards, to look at the illustration and see how different it was from how they saw it.
You are doing like a prediction exercise and then maybe getting students to check their predictions?
Or even very often I'll get them to draw it. So I would get them to draw three pictures showing what happened in the poem, and then they see the pictures from the book.
Brian Tomlinson, everyone, and you can also find more about Brian and his work on his Material Design Association. So the website is www.matsda.org.
And you can also check out Brian's latest book called The Complete Guide to the Theory and Practice of Materials Development for Language Learning. I'll put a link to that book on the webpage.
All right, thanks very much.
Good luck adapting your course books, everyone.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
For more podcasts, videos, and blogs, visit our website, www.tefltraininginstitute.com.
If you've got a question or a topic you'd like us to discuss, leave us a comment.
And if you want to keep up to date with our latest content, add us on WeChat at TEFL Training Institute.
If you enjoy our podcast, please rate us on iTunes.